29th, 2007, and our
31st,
whatever it is, we'll put the 29th down here. Oh, well. They like to get me confused, doesn't take much. I do know that it's Friday, though, we're all leaving today, right?
Yeah.
Our staffer du jour is Rick Burkoving today, but we are actually moving into a permanent staff situation. Rick will be staffing as the lead staffer for this committee the rest of the session. Alana will be working with us still, and so we kind of got that stabilized, and it'll actually work better for everybody this way. Rick, I think you wanted to make an announcement.
Thank you, Chairman, it's good to be back. And just for anybody's, if you've not seen this, the State of the States has come out from Academy Hell, and Alana will be ordering copies for all the members. This is a good compendium of what's happening around the country in terms of comprehensive healthcare reform. So we'll be getting you copies here in the next week or so. Thank you, Chair.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If I happen to get a third member of our Subcommittee on Access of the House Committee on Healthcare, I will gavel that committee back in.
All right. So you'd have a quorum at that point, wouldn't you? Okay, if you need to, we'll handle the gavel right down until you can do it. Tonight, we're going to do a couple things. First, we're going to look at the guiding principles following that, which I hope we can get through fairly quickly, may not be able to. We're going to have a presentation by some savants from Care Oregon about two potential healthcare plans that show us sort of at the ground level what can be done to hold down healthcare costs, open up access, and be inclusive of all individuals. One of the things I wanted to say tonight also was that, and I don't have a copy, as I apologize for it, we'll get one out next week. Senator Westland and myself sent a letter out to the legislature, some of you may or may not have seen. That letter basically said that this committee will be looking at all proposals that are available to us, all four or five of them, that we are asking people not to line up behind any of them, ours included, and that the process we're going to go through here and the responsibility of this committee is to see that the best of all those plans are brought together into one plan and then brought out at the end of session or sometime well before then to set the superstructure for what we think is significant healthcare reform for the state. So we'll try to get that letter out to everybody so they can see it. We just didn't bring it tonight, and I apologize for that. Key thing being, we don't want this splintering, we do not want this to be a sort of a mass assault in healthcare with nothing getting done in the end. There are people who I think would probably enjoy that happening. We're not going to let that happen in this committee. Having said that, committee members, some of you have had opportunity to see the draft, the guiding principles that were collated from our last meeting. Unfortunately, some of you may not have had a chance to see those. And I'm going to ask Rick to kind of go through them line by line. And as we go through, if you want to make comments, just speak up directly. I think we can get through it faster that way. Some of this may be sort of recognizable from some of the things that the commission did, and others are things we've added in as a result of our last committee meeting. Rick, do you want to take it through it real quick?
Sure, thank you, Chairman. Just for clarification, did you want to stop and do any editing or just general comments as we go through these? Or first pour through them and then discuss them later?
I would like to get general comments as we go through. We're not going to try to word craft tonight. If people have significant difficulty with any part of the committee, we'll make a note of it, and we'll bring it back again on the next meeting on Monday. But I don't want to spend a lot of time trying to word craft it tonight.
Thank you, Chair. Opening statement, core statement is the consensus of the Senate Committee on Healthcare Reform that incremental changes will not solve our state's healthcare crisis. Spending more money to do more of the same is not a solution. Comprehensive reform is required. Guiding principles, number one, improving and protecting the health of all Oregonians must be a primary issue and important goal of the state. It is recognized that the current system is unsustainable and in need of comprehensive, fundamental, and immediate change. Access, cost, transparency, and quality are intertwined and must be simultaneously addressed for reform to be sustainable.
Any questions?
Just, I think at some point in the list there, Mr. Chair, there needs to be something about responsibility as well, so. I mean, because that's going to become a key component is people being responsible for their components and.
Responsible by the individual.
Well, responsibility for all components of the system, individual, providers, everybody, so.
Two pretty much takes care of that.
Well, Mr. Other Co-Chair, yeah, but in the list of things that need to be simultaneously addressed, anyway. You just had to just throw things
No,
out.
That's all right. I think what you're saying here is in two, we're going to jump to that in a minute, that really says about responsibility in the reform process. It doesn't really speak to responsibility in health care itself, and in health itself. So you may have a point. We should probably add it into one.
Okay. Sustainability.
Mm-hmm. Number two, health care is a shared responsibility. All stakeholders, including consumers, government, employers, providers, and health plans, must be involved in the health care reform process and must be part of the solution.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Somewhere as we finalize this, or maybe it's down further, that notion of shared responsibility also includes shared payment for the health care system, and that was made explicit in the Health Policy Commission report. And that's what leads to this issue of everybody needs to have a part, needs to be a part of the payment process, part of the financing process.
We'll make a point of that too. And here's your cavil. You got another member joining you?
No, actually, not quite.
He's an interloper.
Oh, he's an interloper. Oh,
the full committee.
Representative Morrow.
He's a member of the full committee.
I apologize, Representative Morrow.
He's close.
Thank you for joining.
He's one of us, but I still can't gavel.
Okay. Rick.
Number three, all Oregonians should have equal access to an affordable level of essential health services that are based on publicly debated criteria, reflect a consensus of social values, and consider the good of individuals across the lifespan.
Consensus is a tough word, Mr. Chair. But that's something to be considered later on. It's just to get consensus of 303.6 million people may be difficult.
Yeah, well, according, supposedly consensus is somewhere between 51% and 80% or somewhere in that neighborhood. It's not 100%.
Definitions.
Yeah, it's really broad. So.
Okay.
Well, we can start here. We all like breathing air. Okay, is anyone going to disagree with that?
I'm mixed on it. But
I know. With the smoke, you put your lung.
He does. He filters his air very, very effectively. Yeah.
Number four, society is responsible for ensuring equitable financing of care for Oregonians who cannot afford essential health care.
My comment would be it ought to end after Oregonians. And equitable financing is important, even for people who can't afford it.
Does that go to the part you're talking about of shared payment?
It's exactly the point that I'm making. It's equitable, and if you can't afford it, you need help, but we all need equitable financing.
All right.
Chair, we can debate on that one, because clearly there's going to be a system developing, and there's going to be special needs for other folks, and as I view it, that's addressing that portion. So.
You'd like to leave that in there.
The way it is.
Yeah, the carve-outs we're definitely going to have to have. So I understand Representative Greenlick's concern, but having notice in this of the special populations, I think, is appropriate.
I'll go with this. We'll find.
Okay. We'll add in, Representative Greenlick, we'll add in your concerns about shared payment. I think that would be an appropriate place to drop it in as a number four.
That's fine.
Mr. Chair, I actually hate to acknowledge this, but I think I got to go with Jeff on this one.
Okay, we'll have consensus.
Which was my point. We're arriving at consensus.
I am about ready to send two of the children to the room.
Okay.
Moving on, Rick.
Number five. Healthcare should emphasize public health, encourage the use of quality services and evidence-based treatment that is appropriate, safe, and discourages over-treatment. Delivery systems must be integrated and payment incentives aligned in order to encourage high quality and high value care. Health providers and informed patients must be the primary decision makers about and accountable for the individual's health.
That's good.
Do we want something in the sentence second there, the integration of and payment incentives concerning cost controls? Proper incentives to control costs as well as guaranteeing quality care.
Control costs and encourage high quality care.
Mr. Chair, just a question here, because I like the statement, but when we're talking about providers and patients being the primary decision makers, does that make appropriate reference to liability issues that prevent providers from at all times making best decisions based on best health care rather than liability protection? Or do we need something more specific in there on that point?
Frank, what do you think?
Well, I think it's certainly a valid
issue. I shouldn't say Senator Morris. I'm sorry.
I like Frank, and it's after 5 o'clock.
That's so true.
Okay.
It's a major issue that if we don't address, I think it really calls into question the success of any reform.
And let's put something. We will craft language for that under that sentence. Okay? Okay. Six.
Number six, health care is one important factor affecting health. Funding should be explicit and economically sustainable and must be balanced with other programs that also affect health. There must be clear accountability for allocating resources and for the human consequences of funding decisions.
Committee, I don't see any further questions or suggestions. Can we conceptually pass this and bring it back to you the next meeting? Thank you. Then, Rick, I'll leave it up to you to do that and bring it back to us. Okay. Thank you. Yes.
Can I ask a question? There are some underlying assumptions that are in these that we might want to get explicit. For example, it talks about health claims. Even though we're talking about the need for radical reform in the system, this assumes that the radical reforms end up having health plans. I don't have a major problem with that assumption, but I just wanted to put it on the record. And I think we find this in a few other places where we are assuming, while we're talking about radical reform on the one hand, we're assuming elements of the existing system on the other. And somewhere we're going to need to deal with that juxtaposition. I don't think we need to deal with it here.
I would agree, and frankly, the models we've looked at from all four groups have not talked about elimination of health plans that I've seen. I think there's an assumption, you're correct, the assumption is that we'll maintain a lot of what we have. We're not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater, but a lot of things have to change around those plans.
But the word isn't radical, it's comprehensive. First words, at least that's what I'm reading up in the core statement, with some inference that you're not throwing everything out. Radical's obviously a more dramatic.
Well, I mean, in a sense, we're going to ultimately have to deal with what they're talking about. And I like comprehensive better than radical. Whether we're dealing with comprehensive reform of the financing system, or whether we're also talking about inherent comprehensive reform of the delivery system.
I think we have to talk about both. You can't simply refunding, changing the funding, clearly is not the answer.
Questions is, what elements in both the way we finance and pay for health care now and how we deliver health care, we're going to be balancing how to keep the good elements of the existing system, those are two separate systems, while being prepared to put in place comprehensive change.
I think you're absolutely correct.
That's the next eight weeks for us.
Next 8 weeks.
Mr. Chair, I'd say, and I agree with Representative Greenlick, but I would say in the core statement it's kind of inferred in that nothing is sacred and all things are on the table. So,
okay.
I mean, the core statement, comprehensive reform, I mean, that means that all things are subject to review, revision, change.
I think that is the overreaching point. Is comprehensive reform is required is what we're talking about here. So if it's still acceptable, we'll move forward with this conceptually, and you'll bring it back to us. The major part of our meeting tonight is going to be concerning two delivery models, and we'll be looking at other delivery models besides these two in the future, but we want to start with these two. Care Oregon has looked at these carefully, one's from Alaska and one's from a city in Sweden, which I cannot pronounce. I have tried several times.
My hometown.
Is it? Well, my tongue is still bleeding from trying to say it several times. I finally quit. Dr. David Labby and Pam Maria Nason will be presenting to us tonight. I'd like to have you come up and, for the record, give your names, phone numbers, addresses, social security numbers, anything that we can use for identity theft that would be helpful to us.
Because we're going to fix that one.
Yeah, but it's not fixed yet. I'm hoping she's got a good credit card out there. So we'll ask you to lead us through this, and what I'm going to ask the committee to do is, I feel comfortable with this committee with it. If you want to ask a question, just speak directly to the individuals involved. You don't have to go through me and follow up the same way. If three people are asking at once, we'll have to, step in. But I think it's best in this situation of the time we have available to us that we ask questions as we go along for a certain degree. I don't want you to go all the way through it and then people have 20 questions. Let's deal with those questions as we go along. Is that okay?
All right.
Pam, is that okay with you?
That's fine.
Good.
Sure. I'm Pam Marion Nason from CARE, Oregon. And
I'm David Levy from CARE, Oregon.
Thank you for inviting us, and Senator Bates, Senator Westland, senators and representatives, we appreciate the opportunity to come here today. We wanted to start out by saying we are going to talk about what's going on in Sweden. If we really could do that, we'd have Swedish accents. But when you hear people from Sweden talk about their health plan, they start by talking about themselves and telling you where they fit in their communities and what they do for activities and about their families. It's a very different perspective. So we'll do our darndest to try to represent them here tonight. We're going to also talk about Alaska, and we have more in-depth knowledge about that, so we'll be able to answer more of your questions around that. Our presentation is called The Other Side of the Quality Chasm, and Dr. Labby reminded me we should tell you why we call it that. And basically, we do a lot of our work with the Institute of Medicine's Crossing the Quality Chasm, which many of you are very familiar with, and so that's where the title from our presentation comes from and a lot of what guides our work as well. So we'll move on. Why we've been invited, I think we just wanted to point out some of the things we've been involved in and why we might be sitting here. First and foremost, I do want to give credit to the fact that we have been a fully capitated health plan in this state and learned a tremendous amount from the other fully capitated health plans as well as our own experience working with our population. We've been involved with the Institute for Healthcare Improvement for a number of years, and we did just put up a little bit, it's actually right off their website, of what the Institute for Healthcare Improvement is, because I think that's an important foundational step to understand some of where our learning has come from. And this is an organization that we would really recommend anyone involved in healthcare pay attention to that, healthcare reform. And the other piece is the Center for Healthcare Strategies grants that CARE Oregon has been involved in for the last 5 or 6 years now, where we've taken as many opportunities as we can to work with other organizations across the country on best practices, particularly as it relates to the Medicaid population, but we've had lots of opportunity to look at other health plans in the process of doing that. And all of that work has helped us develop an evaluative set of criteria, if you will, that we think through when we look at other systems. We did come in contact with Eon Shipping and Anchorage primarily through IHI. And that's where we really began to look at what they had to offer, and we'll show you a bit about why. We do have a firm belief that the Institute of Medicine's work has a foundation that can instruct us for the future. We believe that through that organization, IHI in particular, we have exposure to healthcare change leadership and organizations. It's really an invigorating, fascinating environment to be in. And we work with the South Central Foundation in Anchorage and the County Council of Eon Shipping in Sweden on watching closely what they're doing.
You couldn't say that?
No. It doesn't look that way when you see the word.
It doesn't look anything
like that. Non-jipping.
So why is CARE Oregon involved in doing this? And one thing we hold very, very dear is that quality improvement is core to our business strategy. If we're going to continue to be able to be successful in managing with a very finite resource, with a very challenging population, we know that we have to be involved in continuous quality improvement. We're very concerned about the sustainability of the current financing and delivery systems, and we're watching that closely. We are ready to explore opportunities to facilitate change and to improve the systems so that we can pay differently for services that make sense to us. And that's a lot of what we're doing in the work that we're doing with our clinical partners right now. And quite frankly, we're just tired of paying for what's not really working. Our disclaimer, felt it was important to point out that we don't purport to be experts in what they're doing in Alaska or Sweden. We've had a lot of experience with it, but I'm not going to say that we're going to be able to sit here and talk about the Swedish healthcare delivery model to a level. We'll have to ask Representative Greenlick to do that if you want that level of detail.
I can't pronounce something like that either.
Jan Schipping. Dr. Levy.
Senator Bates, Senator Westland, members of the committee, it's a pleasure to talk about something I know a little bit about. I hope that we can give you enough detail, though clearly the people who really know this stuff well would also be informative to bring here. I know that Dr. Eby from South Central Foundation has been down and talked to a lot of people, and all of what we learned has been through talking with him and going to see what they have in Alaska. The discussion before, I think, really picked up on the theme that we want to focus on, which is that healthcare reform is really two things, at least two things. It's financing reform and it's changing the delivery system. What we're going to be talking tonight is really the delivery system at the level of the clinical delivery system, not so much at the health plan level. I'm going to do this. I'm going to drive. Okay. One of the things you hear at IHI, and certainly we heard very strongly from the Swedes, is this repeated phrase that everybody has two jobs in healthcare, and every job one is to provide care. All health professionals and everybody who works in healthcare is considered a health professional. His first job is to provide care, and job two is to improve care. And one of the things that really stands out in both of the systems that we're looking at is that they have put a tremendous commitment into quality improvement. So the idea is not just that we have a model that seems better and we're going to put it into place, but we're going to test everything. We're not going to do it just because we're not going to do something just because we think it's good, but we're going to prove it's good. And everybody in the system, from the person who cleans up after the clinic to the medical director to the CEO, is going to be involved in some sort of improvement process. Everything is done very intentionally. So what the clinical delivery systems that you'll see are ones that have been thought about, tested, and are constantly in sort of organic growth. So Alaska, we've been up to Anchorage. We have a sense of that pretty much close hand. I've been up there several times. The Jan Schipping experience is really one that we've heard about. We've been very impressed with what we've seen. We've certainly met with the leadership from Jan Schipping County and talked to them. I heard their presentations multiple times, but we really haven't been there, so we don't have a depth of knowledge. It's mostly been by report. This, of course, is of Anchorage. The South Central Foundation is one of the tribal groups that administers the benefit to the Alaska Natives. There are a number of tribal groups. South Central has a 22-year history. What is really critical for them was a point that occurred about 1999 or so, when they got control of the hospital in Anchorage. Before, the Indian Health Service had run all of the Indian Health Service clinics. So they ran the clinics, they ran the hospital, and it wasn't really Native owned. There was legislation in the 70s that gave the tribes the option of taking control. And in around 1999, they did. And when they took control, they really said, why shouldn't, if we're going to control this, if this is going to be ours, why won't it reflect our values, and why won't it be the best healthcare system in the world? We're used to basically getting third world medicine as we perceive it. Why shouldn't we have first world medicine? Why, in fact, shouldn't we be the best? South Central, I don't know that we have a picture of this. South Central administers the benefit. Here we do. To basically the area you see up in the right corner, it's Anchorage and all the way out through the Aleutian chain. So most of their patient base comes out of Anchorage, but they have people strung out in little clinics and little villages all the way out, and so they're responsible for the health aides who operate in you know, a village with 30 to 50 people off the roads, wood heat, very simple conditions, and they're also responsible for the urban population. And there's been tremendous in-migration from the rest of Alaska as people get tired of chopping their own wood and want to move to the city where there are utilities. So they've seen a growth of the population in Anchorage for what they're responsible. One of their challenges is that their Indian Health Service funding, which is by treaty, doesn't reflect the amount of people coming into their system. So they have to constantly think about how are they going to deliver services more cost effectively. The hospital that they built was really in reaction to the hospital they had experienced under the Indian Health Service. We talked to a lot of the employees who were Alaska Natives at South Central, and they universally described the old IHS hospital as one that was totally unfriendly, abusive to patients. They didn't feel like they belonged there. They were treated poorly. We had one young woman who told us how, as a child, she had some kind of condition, and when they wanted to draw blood, they basically strapped her down and screaming drew blood from her. They all had stories of how they felt abused and mistreated by the system before, and when they took control of the health system, they wanted to have a system that not only did they own, but they felt comfortable in, that reflected their values, and that one that they could be proud of. And what was amazing to us in talking to them is that they had actually accomplished this, that in a certain sense, building this healthcare system, which has some of the world's best outcomes, was a part of the healing for that community. You can't really see it here, but the hospital itself reflects many of the themes in Native culture. I don't know if I can do this. I can do this. These buildings right here are actually modeled after longhouses that occur in the Northwest Coast. This is a round structure that models architecture that's seen up in the north with the Yupik. It's round because the wind blows really strongly, and they have a kind of an entrance that blocks the wind coming into the building. There's a stripe pattern that you can't see that's also a Native theme. And you go in the hospital, there's all kinds of Alaska Native art that's throughout. It's a place that's obviously theirs. They did the same thing in their primary care clinic when they took themes from their own architecture and built it. So they wanted to make a statement from the beginning that this is their system reflecting their values. The leader is Catherine Gottlieb. She has won. Her own history is fairly remarkable. Single mom, many kids. Sort of worked her way up. Became an MBA. Was recognized in MacArthur from the MacArthur Foundation with a Genius Award for what she's done at South Central. But she and the other Native leaders have made it clear that this is going to be their system. And you hear that over and over again. But they actually don't call patients. They call them customer owners. Nobody calls them patients. You go through. They're all customer owners, and they're treated with utmost respect. And you know, just walking through the clinic, hearing how someone makes an appointment, you get the feeling that this is a different medical world than we experience. The key pivot points in their system are really relationships. They talk about the most important thing in healthcare is creating a relationship, because what the output of healthcare should be is healthy behaviors. And it's not that in terms of dealing with the population, it's the job of the healthcare system is not simply to prescribe pills, treat pneumonias, treat acute things, but to partner long-term with the population to make sure that they develop the best health that they can. And so to do that, they talk about removing all the barriers between the healthcare system and the population. So, you know, part of removing a barrier was making an environment that the Native population felt comfortable in. Part of the removing of barriers is, if you want an appointment, you call today, and if you want to be seen today, you'll be seen today. If you want to talk to your care team, you have a direct line. You don't have to go through a phone tree to find your care provider. Part of building the relationship is that you are enrolled in a panel of patients with a team of healthcare providers. The panel is fixed at about 1,000. They know who you are, and if you don't come in, they'll call you up. because they want to know who you are. Your family is can choose to be enrolled in the same panel. So they're not just dealing with you as an individual, but they're truly dealing with you in your community, that they know you, they know your values, they know what makes a difference to you. And so when it comes time to have that conversation about, well, perhaps you're a new diabetic and you need to control your diabetes because you want to take your grandkids fishing. They know that about you. They know you go fishing. So it's building relationships. The other thing they've done is they said, you know, healthcare is, if it's going to be about relationships, it's not about visits. The whole visit-based economy that we currently have, where if you want to see the doctor, you have to call up, make an appointment, and you can only talk to the doctor in the within the walls of the exam room. That's not really furthering relationships. If you want to, they don't require that their physicians see a certain number of patients. They require that their physicians or clinicians have a good relationship. So they don't count visits. They don't have quotas for visits. And if somebody needs a phone call rather than a visit, they'll get a phone call rather than a visit. If somebody somebody's on the schedule and doesn't really need to be seen, somebody will call them up and say, well, what's your issue? Can we deal with this over the phone? There's no reason for you to interrupt your life coming in if you don't need to be seen. Do I need to just send you to the lab? So they have a lot of flexibility in how they take care of patients. They've also spent a lot of time developing the workforce to be able to deliver this relationship-based care. They, as Alaska Native organization, they preferentially hire Alaska Natives, but they spend a huge amount of time training them so that they know how to operate within the new model. Everyone goes through at least a week of training to the medical culture, whether it's the janitor or the medical director, they go through the same week. The medical assistants who room patients go through a week of training in a mock exam room so they know how to treat the patients, what to do. It's all very standardized so that they have a reliable product and they study what's the best way to deliver that product. They've also, as I said, completely redesigned their space. I showed you a picture of the outpatient clinic. They've outgrown that now. They're currently expanding into a 70,000 square foot new space, and they're completely redesigning it because they found that the model that they created before, the kind of space that they had before, really didn't work, and so that they're redoing it the next iteration. So they're constantly looking at things and redesigning things.
Dr. Levy?
Mm-hmm.
I've had this opportunity to go up there and see this, and so it's very fascinating, very worthwhile to travel there and see this. You mentioned that there's about 1,000. My understanding is that there's 1,000 to 1,200 people that are the responsibility of the team. I don't know if you defined what the team is, and the point that they see maybe 15 people a day, and they're hoping to get that down to 12. And so instead of a doctor who's getting compensated based on seeing 30 to 40 a day and how many procedures and how many visits, that's not the way that the compensation takes place. The compensation's based, and you can go into this a little bit more detail, about how's your group doing? Are they healthy and are they happy? And what's the results at the end of the year with satisfaction? And when you're talking not about patients in line, but owners, what was the term?
Customer owners,
and these are people that don't always get treated very well. I mean, they feel very uplifted at being a part of it. And so would you define a little bit more about what the team is and how that works?
Right, Representative Richardson, we're going to go over that in a little more detail in a minute. That is a crucial a piece of this. Just where we're at now is, I just want you to know that one of the reasons that we got interested in this was that when you look at the outcomes that they have, they're fairly impressive. They have decreased ER utilization by 40% during this model. They have decreased specialty care by 50%, and that's not because people don't have access to specialists. It's because they've figured out how to hand off to specialists in a more appropriate way, so people are getting more care from the primary care physicians, and that is appropriately done by primary care physicians rather than the primary care physicians being so overburdened that they say, oh, you have diabetes, you go to an endocrinologist. Oh, you have a thyroid problem, you go to an endocrinologist. Oh, you have this. They just don't. The primary care physicians are not just sort of gatekeepers handing people off to others. They've decreased their primary care office visits by 20%, reflecting what Representative Richardson was talking about. And most importantly, they've decreased the admissions and inpatient days by 30%. That's where the dollars are in healthcare, and that's been a huge saving for them. We'll look at some of the graphs that we have that show some of the other outcomes.
Dr. Labbe,
yeah.
You know what level they started out at? Were they at a very high level, of, at your average level in comparison to, say, in this part of in Oregon or the rest of the country? Were they way up here and came down, or were they about where most of us are and came down?
Senator Bates, I think that they actually were higher. I mean, in terms of compared to our medical community, I think that their dysfunction was greater than our dysfunction, if you will. Mm-hmm. And that the part of this improvement has come to where we are and gone beyond where we are.
We have pretty good figures for hospital stays, length of stays, mm-hmm. in Oregon. Yeah, can you compare their length of stay and admissions now compared to ours?
Days per thousand.
Right. I don't have the figures right now. I've seen some figures that seem that they actually are not as good as we are in terms of length of stays. And actually, we were talking to them about that earlier this week. And one of the issues there is that a lot of their hospital stays are based on people coming, being flown in from the bush. And so one of their major challenges is how to get people back to a small village that has no electricity when they have a medical condition. They're very interested in one of the dialogues we're having with them is what can they learn from us as a managed care plan, because they're interested in taking the sort of their control of their system to another level, sort of looking at sort of what we have learned. But they have challenges that we don't, given their geography.
Yeah. While you're stopped, I think it's interesting, and I will make an assumption here, that clearly for those sorts of results, you have to have a culture change mm-hmm. in the clients as well as a change in the system. And it'd be interesting to know how they have affected that. Obviously, they're dealing with a smaller population, but also remote populations as well. And so it'd be interesting how they're able to affect the culture change to move people towards preventative care and appropriate care and stuff that's going to be a huge challenge for us to be able to accomplish that.
Senator Cruz, I think that the part of the answer to that, and they would certainly answer better than I, is that when you're dealing with, as they would say, a relationship-based system, they actually spend time counseling people so that they understand what the healthcare system's for and how it should deliver services to them, so they understand the importance of that. They're not driven by a 15-minute visit. So there, you know, whatever it takes to get you to understand how this is important to you, that's what they spend the time to do that, and they work with you starting with where you're at, what your values are, and they try and take you through that kind of educational process. And I think that the concept that you're a customer owner, that this is a health system for you, is a little bit different than our relationship to our healthcare system, where we're sort of we expect it to do sort of solve things for us. Right, and there is a cultural shift that has occurred or is occurring, because this is a learning process for the community.
Right.
And the other thing that's sort of unique with them is that so many of their employees are actually Alaskan Natives that they carry back to the community the set of values that they're finding in that is developing within the clinics, right. And that's a dialogue that sort of that reinforces the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, Ms. Chair, I was kind of wondering about that, because I would think that the Native American culture and getting back to that probably is more conducive to this than I want everything now and I want somebody to do it for me culture that we've developed in this country. So
I would agree, but I also think that culture, they've used that culture in a very positive way to make a better healthcare system, obviously. Now that culture also has some very difficult and special challenges that we don't share at as big a level as they do. I mean, I know that alcoholism is a huge problem for Native Americans at a much mm-hmm. higher level than us. And I would be very interested in seeing what the per member per month costs are on the old plan and where they're at now. I'm sure it's come down. It would be interesting to see those figures. And a comparison may be more important from where they were to where they are now than to with us. I mean, they started a different place and are end up in a different place, but it's the improvement we're looking for.
And I just wanted to add for Senator Cruz to the question, I don't think you can undersell the idea of respect in that patient population and what we saw. And Representative Richardson could probably speak to that too, but even walking around those clinics, I was really brought up short just by listening to the appointment schedulers talk to the patients on the phone. And everywhere you go, it's just clear that there's a level of respect that goes into the communication between the staff in those settings. And I think they have struggled with issues of entitlement, with alcoholism, with poverty, with a lot of the same kinds of challenges, certainly spousal abuse that we have in Oregon as well. But they have begun to overcome that. And one of the things I think Dr. Labby will elaborate more on is how much they do at each patient visit. And as he was saying, we're driven by that 15-minute visit. That's totally different now than their model. They want to do everything for that patient while they have that patient in the room. And I think that really enables patients to feel like they're valued in the system. And I'm sure he'll address more of that.
Dr. Bates?
Yes.
Quick comment. Well, yes. I think that we culturally need to not undersell Oregonians in our ability to flex. And if we build it, they will come. And that those cultural changes would not happen if you didn't have people in Alaska, because I've been there, spent a year in a healthcare system up there, that it's basically if you build it, they will come. And so please do not understate the ability of an Oregonian to remain flexible.
I think you got a good point there. Really do. I think that Oregonians may be looking for something, I guess, more than we realize. Let me ask another question that goes along with that. Are the patients or the clients, as they call them, trying to be politically correct here. Are they developing a sense of responsibility themselves for their health too? Has the system led them to that area?
I don't know the answer. I can't answer that with anything other than a supposition. But if you look at the data they have on their treatment of diabetes, and there is a large impact of alcoholism and substance abuse in that population. They have, if you look at their blood sugar control for their population, nobody's better. So, you can't get there without diabetes.
Without a sense of responsibility.
Because it's a day-to-day, that's a disease that you deal with day-to-day. So, I don't know how, and it is phenomenal because they have to be doing something different. And I think I think respect is a huge part of it. And trying to deal with people starting with where are they at, what's important to them, what's their value system. The interesting thing I would add in terms of the Oregonians, they outlined for us what they thought the key native values are, and, they're just human values as far as I could tell. I mean, they resonated with all of us. There's nothing, they're spoken in native framework, but in fact the fundamentals are the things that most human beings would want out of a healthcare system and a relationship with a healer, truly.
We have half an hour left.
Go for it. So I said they have some sayings that, drumbeats as they call them, no more islands, do all today's work today, what role are you uniquely qualified to do, and most importantly, your work is not your schedule, but the needs of the entire population. I think we've sort of talked about those. So let me talk a little bit more about the team and what we call the microsystem, what happens in the clinical system. So the team is a clinician, usually in their system, a pediatrician or a family physician, some nurse practitioners, not a lot. There's a nurse case manager who basically works with that team, assigned to that team. The nurse case manager has an assistant to help with sort of administrative tasks. There's a medical assistant to room patients. And importantly, there's a behavioral health consultant. There's a counselor kind of person who can deal with behavioral health, mental health issues as they come up in the clinical visit. So in this, since we know that depression, anxiety, substance abuse, resource problems are such a problem in every culture, not having to refer somebody out to a different system. So if they have depression, you don't have to send them to somewhere else it can be treated right now with somebody who is best qualified to treat it. It makes a huge difference. So the person with depression who was also a diabetic but not able to deal with their diabetes because of depression can be dealt with, and you can move on then to deal with the diabetes. So that team is truly a team. It's not a team that supports the clinician. So not everything runs through the doctor. Everybody on that team has a role, and everybody can do different, do their part. So when somebody comes in to be seen in the office, it's the medical assistant who can decide what health, immunizations need to be done. They don't need, they're set up so they don't need a special order from a doctor. Or it's the medical assistant who can examine the feet of a diabetic. So they've got a division of labor so they can be very efficient. The concept of do today's work today is if somebody comes in for a cold, they're going to look at what everything they need. If they need to be...
Yeah. This team, you said, sees 12 patients a day?
We're going to talk about that in a minute, okay? But this team will, on the average, by their count, sees between 13 and 17 patients a day. Actually, just go to that slide.
Five FTEs?
No. Right, 13 to 17 patients a day. They consult and support in the villages another 5 to 10 patients, because the health aides in the villages will send in EKGs by fax or send in requests for pharmacy by fax. They have a big telepharmacy system. And they also do outreach to another 15 to 20 patients who they don't bring in, but they actually take care of. So these are the people who don't need visits, but they need some health support. So if you add it all up, they're actually dealing with healthcare for 40 people a day. Okay, so I know that where you're going is that's 5 FTE. That's actually not bad for what they're getting. Plus, if you do in the intensity of service so that you decrease ER visits, you decrease hospitalizations, it is extremely cost effective. So they're putting their dollars in prevention, education, counseling, behavior change. And what they're getting out of it is decreased costs, and they're investing in prevention, and they're investing in health behavior change.
I'm assuming that's an intensive amount of case management, and that would probably point to the results they're having in diabetes and other disease management as the fact that they're having specified number of contacts with their chronic and other folks, because I'm assuming that's the population that they're contacting all the time, is people that are in ongoing treatment, and that would, for me, Mr. Chair, look like one of the key factors to their disease, their ability to control diabetes, among others.
But on that,
and that's a good example. Yeah. It's a chronic disease you're trying to manage and maintain. And
but they also have a huge emphasis on prevention. So that if you had a baby and you didn't come in for your immunizations, they will call you up and bring you in. So, I mean, the prevention is really what this team is focused on as well. And they have actually an electronic system that tells you who's got what and who hasn't got what. And they will call you up and encourage you to come in to get what you need.
Yes.
Thank you. What kind of diet do they have day to day? Now, a lot of people on the lower end of the economic scale have the worst diet possible. So when we're talking diabetes and some of these issues, do they eat a lot of potato chips and drink a lot of pop and so on? Do they eat the junk food that has filtered down into the more healthy primitive societies, early societies?
Senator Morissette, I think that's correct. But they have spent a lot of time on those kinds of issues. They have dietitians available. They actually have an area where they have sort of native people talking about native foods, native diet. So they tried to recast everything in terms of what the diet for their culture should be versus the diet of the fast foods. So that is a huge issue.
Senator Bates, can I go back to Representative Greenlick for a minute?
Absolutely.
I just wanted to further, I can see the wheels in your head turning with the FTE question, and not to belabor this point, but the behavioralist is shared between a couple of primary care teams, integral part of the team, but it's not a full FTE just for that point. The other piece of it is that it's difficult when you think about it in terms of the construct we're used to, because they do this max packing, and it's a very different model of delivery. So when when you think about it, it's really, it was hard for me to get my head around the fact that if a mom comes in for a reason and she has two kids with her, they're going to check the vaccine records, as Dr. Labby was saying, for those two kids. They're going to take care of other issues for the family members that come in with that person. It's just such a different construct than what we're used to. It's a little hard to apply our sort of rational FTE model to it.
Let me ask the question. Sort of further elaborate on that. 4.5 FTEs for the primary care panel of 1,200. How many FTEs do you have in your system for primary care for maybe 1,200 people?
I'm not sure because we don't have that. I'm not sure if I can do that math. I can tell you that having talked to a lot of primary care clinics recently, that in the heyday of managed care, we were looking at panel sizes in the 3,000 for a primary care doc, and that's no longer true. It looks like the panel sizes are much lower.
Oh, so, much lower.
Yeah. So I'm not sure this is that far different.
You have 4.5 FTEs for every 1,200 patients in primary care.
I'm sure they would say explicitly, we are investing in primary care because that gives you better outcomes and that will save you in the long run. Actually, Dr. Eby would say you need to invest 4 to 8 times what you're currently investing in primary care to get the kind of outcomes that will make a difference in the healthcare system. Primary care is dirt cheap compared to specialty care, compared to hospital care. So the leverage here is moving the dollars to where they actually will make a difference in terms of the population health.
And we're going to show you some numbers that hopefully support that.
So just quickly, they are a system that gets block grant from the Indian Health Service that gives them lots of flexibility. They also do half of their funding comes from other payers, Medicare, Medicaid, commercial. They are now the provider of choice for the Alaska Native population, so even those people with commercial insurance tend to come into that system. They have some grants, but that does give them the flexibility to break the chain of the office visit and allow them to pay based on just salary and outcomes. Just to give you a quick view, some of their graphs, hospital days per 1,000 assigned to a PCP, you can see that they have come down significantly. Asthma, this is for...
Can I see that back?
That wasn't exactly the way I wanted to do that, but...
Hospitalized per 1,000.
That's a PCP panel.
Yeah, that's per PCP. They do a lot of things based on their panel, not the way we're used to thinking about it necessarily.
At 30 what?
It'll come out to be 25. Really. Where you start? You're starting at 45 and going to 20.
25.
25 what?
Hospital days per 1,000 per their PCP panel.
Hospitalization days per.
No way.
That's hospital days per 1,000 per year.
Okay.
You got me.
1,000 for the whole panel? 25 days per 1,000. That's in
the time frame is not there. I can't tell you, so we can't calculate it. We don't know if it's year, day, quarter.
Okay. But we certainly can get that information from them if you're interested in more detail.
I think the important point of the slide is that they've changed it. You know, it may not be... I don't know how it compares locally, but they've done it. They've impacted it. They've taken a bad situation and made it better. Here's a simpler. This is hospitalizations for pediatric asthma patients, which you can see has significantly gone down. You can see here child immunization rates. So this is up to over 93%. That's pretty impressive in a native population, in any population.
Better than ours.
Yeah. So they have graph after graph of this stuff, and we didn't want to run them all. But the point is that they can show outcomes, and they're constantly looking at their outcomes and trying to improve their outcomes. Part of their system is a huge emphasis on quality improvement, monitoring, measuring, trying to figure out where they can get better leverage out of their system. So we have been, a lot of this resonates, I think, with many of the clinicians that we took up, well, all the clinicians we took up there. It seems to be a way that, you know, one would really like to practice medicine. When we went up there with four or five different clinical groups, everybody sort of felt that this was going back to the basics of why we became clinicians. You know, you have a relationship with a patient, you have a relationship with a community, you're empowered to deal with the health of that group, and that really is much more satisfying. So now we're going to go to Sweden.
Before we leave for Sweden, which is always a nice trip, I suppose. I don't know why both these things are in places that are very cold, but maybe there's a connection, I don't know. Could you bring back to us per member per month costs prior to this program and with this program in place? I mean, the cost in Alaska of doing things is astronomically higher, you know, right. Hamburgers are $10, but
right.
If you can give me and this committee a per member per month cost at the onset and then a per member per month cost this time, that change is what's significant for us.
For the total health care system.
Yes.
While they're taking off for Sweden, one thing that there's some small changes that take place that you don't really think about that make a huge difference. By having the team approach, they know what the medications are being used by the various patients. The Department of Human Services did this survey, and they found that with elderly populations that they're taking care of, the average was like 16 medications. And they actually sent in caseworkers to go through it all, and they were taking medications they got from this specialist and from this specialist, and the primary care doctor didn't know about these things. But by having the team approach, they know what each patient is taking, which actually avoids not only cost but a lot of complications from the adverse effects of the...
So is any healthcare system with an integrated computer? I can't imagine how you practice medicine without knowing what all your patients are doing.
Well, this was given last 2 weeks ago in Congress.
Do you guys have that
problem?
Do you know what your patients are doing?
We know what they fill at the pharmacy.
Yeah.
We don't know necessarily what they take.
That's true in Alaska as well.
It's true. It's true in this state right now. It is common that a patient does not know what pill they're taking, will come to a doctor with prescriptions they've filled for various other physicians, and they don't tell the particular doctor they're seeing about that, and you don't find out till later. You often tell them, bring all your pills to the office, trying to find out what the heck they're taking.
No, I think that's true, Mr. Chair, but any integrated healthcare system that has a computer
should have.
Knows what their patients are.
Should, at least.
Should know. I mean, I had an interesting experience working with Kaiser around what they called medication reconciliation. And in the Kaiser system, they have there was no way that they could figure out how to track the medications that were used on discharge into the primary care setting because they had separate computer systems.
In the hospital.
In the hospital, yeah. So, I mean, computers... can add to complexity as well as simplify.
And Representative Greenman, allow me to channel Dr. Eby for just a minute. What he would say, and I've heard him say it, is approximately, you know, he's got studies that demonstrate approximately 20% of the patients actually take a prescription when Dr. Bates gives them that when they leave his office in the way in which he prescribes it. And I think
the other 80% do better, but we won't go into that. Right?
They do better with that. No. what we do know is that people will split pills, take them off schedule, do all kinds of things that the physicians are not necessarily thinking about at the time they're writing those scripts. And I think South Central, one of the benefits they do offer is they figured out just how little control they have as physicians or clinicians over what the patient actually does when they leave the office. And in that context, they're committed to developing a relationship that would encourage the behavior of the patient to change, to do what they have asked them to do, to engage in that. And
unless
that's a
the patient
big
knows
difference.
Better.
That's a big difference.
You have 20 minutes for Sweden.
Okay. Well, we're going to go there quickly. And I'm going to tell you, don't be afraid, because there's a lot of little writing, and some of it is actually in Swedish. No, we don't speak that. But the concept here was to get some of the theory behind change in health systems and how they went through that, not to be able to explain in detail what it is. So you'll see what I'm talking about. Public health and medical care in Sweden, we're going to go through this fairly quickly, is conducted by the county council's health care centers and hospitals, and also private doctors who offer medical care. We wanted to give you some pictures. So let's go through this real quick. The health care in Sweden is financed through taxes. Imagine having 81 people who are elected politicians that are the boss of the person who runs the healthcare system, and that's exactly what they do. And he's he thinks it's a fine model. They have public meetings four times a year to decide the work of the county council and general level and the tax rate. So he's directly accountable to the citizens in the county.
These are those of you who might have missed it. That was a slam. Okay.
Move
on.
He's directly accountable for the tax increases related to health care, as well as having 81 elected bosses.
Mr. Chair, so this is, you say county council, this is actually counties. This isn't a nationwide, it's broken up into components. Okay.
You're a plant.
And we're
there
looking
you
at one specific county.
Okay. We're looking at one specific, but we'll tell you why we're looking at that one specific county. You want to talk about the county?
Yeah, this is the county of Young Shipping. That's what that spells. So they are responsible. The model for health care is pretty much similar county to county in the terms of they have, you know, large hospitals. They have a lot of primary care units. These are usually community clinics. What they do have is they have a community health nurse program, which is fairly well developed. So a lot of the care is given by community health nurses, who are the sort of interface between the community, people in the community, and the clinics. So they visit a lot of the elderly, et cetera. So they have a much different system. They have about 9,500 employees, and they have 34 of these clinics throughout the system, throughout the county. And there's not, nobody is ever very far from a clinic. As you can see the rest of the numbers. We don't need to really go over that.
Okay. This is why we're focusing on Young Shipping County.
Yeah, one of the interesting things about Young Shipping is that Young Shipping's in Sweden, and if you look at overall the rankings of health outcomes by country, Sweden is up there. I mean, it may not be always number one, but it's certainly up in the top five consistently. Then if you look at a scatter plot where you have, you know, you compare quality and cost, you will see that Young Shipping actually delivers the highest quality at the lowest cost. Stockholm is up on the upper right. It's a much more urban area, obviously, but the whole model of care is pretty similar throughout the county, throughout the country. So the question is, what is Young Shipping doing differently than any other county? Do you want to take a
break? Well, they would identify, and this is their slide, that they have three overall aims. Drive out all of the waste, be as effective as possible, and everybody is involved in improvement work. Again, some very similar things to what we found in the Anchorage model, with everyone in the system involved. They asked the question, how do we catch the spirit where all employees can contribute for the system's peak performance? This is a little overwhelming, and I did warn you, I'd like to go on record. But what this shows you is Young Shipping's quality as a strategy and the level of detail that they go into in the different components that they look at in terms of putting together their overall strategic aims for quality improvement. And they do have a balanced scorecard, which does one thing for them. They have system measures that do something else. They have a system view of their county council and how all of the parts should work together to accomplish their goals. One of the things that, well, let's go to this slide. The system measures, this just gives you a little bit better view of this, again, a different view of the kind and level of detail that they go into in their reform efforts. I think it's worth noting that this does talk about, in the report from the Institute of Medicine, the quality chasm. They outlined the six principles that are outlined in the book we talked to you about earlier, and they have adopted those at a national level in Sweden as their principles for driving healthcare and healthcare improvement, which I think is interesting that they're number one and they've adopted our Institute of Medicine's principles.
One of the things that's common between both of these systems is that they have been working for years to create an infrastructure for quality and process improvement. Both of them started working with the Institute for Healthcare Improvement over 10 years ago and have studied things like balanced scorecard, Baldrige, all the quality improvement methodologies, and they've trained all of their staff, everyone, to know how to do quality improvement. So One of the themes that we heard in Alaska, and we certainly heard from the Swedes, is intentionality. They talk about, we do this because we have studied it, and we know what we're doing because we have intended to do it this way, and we've decided this is the way we do it. It's just not going to happen. Nothing happens sort of by chance, and they've tried to drive random variation out of their systems. So the take-home measure I got from Sweden was really not that they were doing anything different structurally, but they were doing everything better. All the details worked. They really had figured out how to make the system hum.
Just another example of where that happens and the types of system measures that they're looking at. And I like the fact they measure functional outcomes as well as clinical cost and satisfaction. A lot of discussion around end of life and where that fits in their population. This is just a quick look at some of the things they measure as far as population wellness, and I liked some of these. Took me a while looking at this one to sort of understand what they meant by that, but after some discussion of still sitting spare time, I think that meant couch potato in our
wrongs. That's what I
was doing. That's what I got too. But the kinds of things that they're measuring, again, in Jönköping County versus the rest of Sweden, it's very interesting. Men and women feeling very stressed. Well, you know, gee, I think our numbers would be higher, personally, than 10 and 11%. Moving on, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this. It is in your handout if you're interested, but I did just do some work from their website about how they finance their system, and it's quite interesting to see how they share expenses with the citizenry, and indeed they do.
So basically, as I'm reading this, for some services, no matter income or what, you're going to pay for it, but like you can go to a nurse for free or just a nurse for free, but anything else you're going to do, you're going to have to pay something.
You're going to have to pay something, and then it's interesting they have this cost ceiling card, and I cannot pronounce that word. But there's clearly, you know, some thought behind how they've structured their benefit package to make sure that there's a limit to the exposure that the individual has. I also think it's interesting they want to be paid in cash, and if you choose instead to have a bill sent, it's going to cost you. Imagine a system where you could do that.
It's kind of interesting.
So, again, I don't want to spend too much time on this piece because I know we have limited time. This is just to give you an idea of the kind and level of measures that they have in their system. This is number of end-of-life care patients that dies at hospital, even though none wishes to. Again, I
mentioned. Wish to die, and then wish to die.
I don't know if that means they don't want to die or if they don't want to do it in the hospital. That's the best for the Swedish translation we can do here. Here we are with adverse drug events, something Representative Richardson was alluding to earlier, and just clearly that they do measure that very closely, and that's one of the examples of clinical indicators that they're looking at. The five P's of microsystem, one of the things we found very much in common is that both groups use a quality improvement methodology that includes microsystem reform, and you can look at this at your leisure, but it is interesting the types of questions. And when I was listening to you go through the principles at the beginning of the meeting, you know, there's some corollary there, certainly. This is just a quick example of how they walk through showing the way for the best possible results. If you're a quality improvement guru, you'd probably see this stuff all the time, but I found it quite interesting to see how they go through this. And in particularly number 7, how do we take what we've learned and make it a natural part of everyday work? Keep going here. And one of the things they do is they have a learning center. They call it a culturum. And this is critical to their success. They have resources dedicated to this so that everyone learns how to do improvement in their system at all times. And that's, I think, Dr. Labby made reference to the fact that they are the best of the best on a lot of measures in a country that does very well. And I think that's one of the reasons why, is because they have a huge commitment to this concept of continuous learning, and they have a Kulturum College, and you can get a master's or a PhD there. All kinds of different levels that they train people to at the appropriate level in the organization. And this was the last of the slides, really, from Sweden. and it just speaks to the stages that they go through here, from awareness through education, process, thinking, redesign, movement, and then full scale. So even though this organization does so well compared to all their peers, this is a constant striving to do better. It's just interesting. Long journey, and they'll always be on their way.
I would ask some of the same questions about this system as the previous one. One, a per member per month cost. That's a marker we can use before and after, so to speak. And that would be helpful if you could bring that back to us, if you can get it.
No, I don't know.
Yeah, these guys have been doing it for so long, but we can try.
We can try. I don't know why you're making up more Swedish words. We've got plenty here already. And I have learned to pronounce it, and now I figure out this word is actually pronounced gone shopping.
That's how your wife will be.
Yeah, so if she goes there, we will go shopping. Okay. But what I also see in this is they have no barriers to seeing the nurse who is probably is delivering primary care.
Mm-hmm.
There is a built-in barrier to seeing the specialist, that there's some out-of-pocket expense for the individual for that.
Mm-hmm.
Did I read that part correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're assuming. We've never been there to sort of get to that level of detail, and so we really can't say for certain. But it certainly looks that way.
Again, it's like I'm loading the system up front.
Yes.
To try to decrease costs in the back end, which are the most expensive costs.
Right.
It would seem that's what they're doing here again. Thank you.
Okay. Do you want to just quickly? We did have some learning, some takeaways from this, which will just take 2 minutes to go over. And you want me to just do it? Okay. Improvement. With both systems, a very intentional focus. Dr. Labby said that. It's got to be intentional from what we've been able to determine from them, where you put your energy and your resources. And we are very focused on sustainable change, because as a company, we're not interested in short-term, and neither are any of these systems, but sustainable change by using continuous cycles. And there's a planning, doing, studying, acting. As long as you know what you want, and this part's very important, you're ruthless in measuring what you actually get out of it. So you know whether you accomplished what you set out for and can change it. The patient, family, citizen has to be at the center of the efforts. We saw that so loud and clear in both of these settings, with the attendant cultural and community issues that accompany that, the good, bad, and the ugly. And the best quality and most cost-effective care is, from what we can see, accomplished by a long-term caring relationship that results in behavioral outcomes from the patient, that they don't want to go necessarily to the next level of care if that's not really what's in their best interest. Why Oregon Now? Obviously, we have a culture here of dealing with challenges and opportunities in a collaborative way, much like they do in Alaska and Sweden. And we do think we have enlightened leadership at a variety of different levels. And we think that there's the time now. There's a lot of great work being done in this discussion. And we just want to close by saying thank you for inviting us to be a part of it.
Thank you very much for your time tonight. Committee members, any questions?
I need to ask.
I'll make an announcement. Our next meeting is Monday night. For Senate members, it'll be in Sweden. For House members, with your $10 limit, you'll be watching on video. Seriously, our next meeting is next Monday evening at 5 o'clock. And thank you for coming tonight. Thank you for your patience. And we'll close the committee meeting. Thank you.